Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Can you find humor in the midst of personal pain? Is spirituality just for Sunday morning, or does it include balancing the checkbook or changing diapers? And how does surrender actually mean taking your head out of your ass? This is part two of my talk with Stuart Davis, rock star and TV show host. Listen in as we discuss how you can learn to be okay when the world is not okay.
Guys, if you want to get your lady a great surprise, get her a Dosa outfit.
It'll have her make out with another chick when you go out to dinner.
That's exactly what Dosa does. And she got pretty partied up that night. I had to carry her home. And as she was being carried home on my back, she was screaming to the neighborhood, "You want to have a baby with me, Stuart? You fucking chicken, scared of babies. Babies, come on, get me pregnant." All that kind of thing. And I was like, shut up.
It's always good to try to emasculate a man into...
She was literally slapping my ass. And I was like, you know, I felt like I had to protect her because she was kind of out of control. And I was like, the cops are going to come. And she's like, the cops fucking love me in this town. which is true. She's a social worker and the police adore her and all that. So when we got home, she leaned in to kiss me and I tried to dodge it and she grabbed me and kissed me anyway. And then in that kiss,
you're just a victim.
I was. Yeah. I was a totally passive victim. When she kissed me, I knew that I was going to marry her and have babies with her and that my whole life had been a decoy.
When you told me you were getting married and you were going to have babies, I knew that the apocalypse, because you were the last guy.
I didn't tell you at that point that I was going to ask you to be the godfather to raise them if something should happen to us as well.
I actually insisted because I knew that it was going to fall apart, that I was going to be responsible for these kids.
I was like, dude, I'm having babies for you. So she kissed me and we fell in love and we began this very sophisticated, nuanced process, which is not cognitive, it's not cerebral or intellectual, but she's helped me grow and develop as a human being in ways that are just very subtle and inexplicable. I mean, I can't tell you why precisely I'm willing to try to become a human being with her when I wasn't with anybody else.
She calls, you know, what I get about your relationship is that she calls you into a higher version of yourself. She brings that accountability and that bullshit. Like, you, she's a powerful woman. She's a good woman in the sense that you know when you're fucking up.
Yep.
She's not withholding anything.
Yes, she is. And she's also the absolute most trustworthy person that I've ever met in my life. I mean, she's fundamentally, to the core, absolutely a good human being.
Now, I remember we were making Bell at the time, your record Bell. And that's when we were in the studio together and you had a baby on the way. And I remember that being a very profound, there was still this context of a much larger thing than I'm getting married and having a baby. speak about that time, because you, here you are, man. You've been rebelling against convention your whole fucking life, and now a baby's going to come in your life, and you're a touring rock musician. How is this going to work?
That was the question that I had no notion about how it would work. And I will say that dying into that reality of becoming a dad and a husband and changing diapers and have a screaming baby, and our daughter was premature. She was born 2.5 months early, so we lived in the hospital for months right as that record came out. And it was a total excruciating annihilation of my ego, because I did enter into a situation where I couldn't escape. I gave up the option of escape, and I committed with her and this baby. And once, you know, like it or not, however big of a narcissist you are, once a child arrives in your life, it does trump. And it doesn't just trump your ego or your own personal wishes in ways that are like social pressure, or you're expected to be a dad now.
It's not a vanity issue anymore.
No,
it is spiritual. The kid does not fucking care about what you look like or how cool you are. It has needs.
And you discover this. I found a dimension of myself when my daughter was born that I did not know existed.
What was
that? It was love, so vulnerable and raw and profound, and just it completely overrode every other impulse in my life. And you just know that there's no way. I guess I shouldn't say no way, but to transgress that would have been the most impossible thing ever. Any amount of pain pales in comparison to try to go against this love you feel for your daughter or for your kid or whoever it is. And everyone says that, and I just, you know, I never conceived of it and never felt it. But when Ara, my first daughter, was born, I did really, really feel like my life was hers, and that wasn't a decision even that I made, that it was done at the moment she came. So I had to resolve the fact of my love for her, which was reconfiguring my life. I had to resolve that against the death of my ego, because, you know, even when you recognize that love, it doesn't make your ego go away. It didn't make it less of a narcissist. So I had to be dunked into this acid bath dozens of times a day and just go through years of slowly, gradually taking the rust off of my soul.
But it took a fucking toll. I mean, you naturally shave your entire body, but I remember coming over and seeing crop circles in your head where hair was not trying to grow back.
it's so true.
Another alien connection here. But I mean, you went through the cooker, and I gave you shit for it because you went through it alone. I'm a big like community guy, like reach out to your boys, and we would talk. But I saw you fucking cook, and it actually manifested in your body. What happened there?
I did wake up one day with holes of. I mean, it's a very strange disease. You overnight, perfect oval patches of hair fall out of your body in chunks anywhere from the size of like a nickel to, and it's stress related induced. It's also autoimmune. It's an autoimmune stress combination. And so I had an anxiety breakdown of the order that the hair literally fell out of my fucking body, and I went to the doctor.
What a perfect disease for you, though. Like,
it was actually quite nice. And
you save money on razors.
I didn't miss that part at all, but it did indicate that I was having a complete freaking meltdown. And I am, you know, I'm from this Scandinavian tradition of spiritual crisis where you walk off into the woods by yourself and slowly
die,
implode. Yeah, you die. And after that, you know, went on for a few years, I very, very gradually started to rely more on friends, rely more on my teacher, build a spiritual community. And this really was because of my daughters. I mean, as my relationship with my daughters developed, you just become very, very gradually more capable of relationship for somebody who's, you know, screwed up as I am in that way.
Hey guys, this is New Man host Trip Lanier. I get emails each week from listeners like you who would love to put what they're hearing on The New Man into practice. A large number of you can't afford my one-on-one coaching sessions, so I'm offering a group package. For a fraction of the cost, you can get coaching from me along with 5 other group members in a weekly phone call. Each week, you'll get clarity about the life you want, and each week, you'll receive support and challenges to help you achieve that vision. This is not for spectators. For more information, visit triplanier.com and fill out an application. I look forward to hearing from you. Now back to the show.
In those moments, did your relationship to Zen or did it help you?
Well, this is the great thing about my daughter spiritually, that she was the one, my wife and daughter, who showed me true Zen. You know, my entire life with Zen up until then was this enlightenment that is absolute, that is not inconvenience with the dirt and muck of earth and babies and blood and shit, and that I was going to wake up in some way that would free me from suffering up through all this shit.
Right. I'm going to get away from the shit of life.
Yes, exactly.
And family actually just...
Yes. And so my wife, who's a Buddhist as well, flipped it completely and demonstrated to me over the course of thousands and thousands of instances in our lives that Zen is engagement and intimacy with the suffering and the messes, and it's further deepening relationship. It's not running away from it. It is committing to this planet, committing to love, committing to people and to humanity. And instead of escaping your human vulnerability and foibles, it is radical commitment to them. And that's something that I never got out of Zen and would not have gotten without them.
I think, you know, this is one of those valuable lessons that somehow spiritual is something over there, or it's, well, it's on a Sunday morning, or it's this or that. But I've been reminded that it's right now, this moment you and I are sharing right now. It's whatever the listener is having right now. There's no unspiritual moment, and including fucking shitty diapers and screaming women and tough finances. It's all right now. There's a lesson. There's a reality in that, like really getting in touch with that reality. And I'm getting like that was the medicine for you.
That's so on the money. That's exactly what it is. And I couldn't agree more. I think that the romantic period of a lot of our spiritual traditions that held these notions, whether it's in Christianity that, you know, we toil in this lifetime so that we get our reward in heaven, and that in heaven we're going to be freed from all this bullshit. Or in Zen, the misinterpretation of Zen saying, oh, I'm going to become enlightened and then I'm not going to be burdened with all this crap anymore.
Traffic won't bother me anymore.
Exactly. Right. And every tradition has some facet that is that temptation that will speak to that and comfort that part of you, but it's not real spirituality. And I also think that there's, as you described, there is a true mass realization, a large part of the world that's waking up to this simple, immediate, intimate spirituality is taking a crap. Spirituality is also meditation, but it's also changing the diaper, being stuck in traffic, finances, balancing a checkbook, all of this stuff. So my spiritual practice became a complete inversion of what I thought it would be in a lot of ways, which is learning to actually balance a checkbook, learning to not run out of a conversation with my wife when I get so fucking pissed that I'm blinded by the white hot lava coming out of the base of my limbic system, you know, like those kinds of things.
So you were running away from convention this whole time. And in the middle of convention was your teaching. That was your God, your divinity, whatever it was the thing that you were running away from the whole time. Just think what could be possible for you if you just got a fucking day job.
That's very funny and probably very true. You remember that Rumi poem where he says, I can't remember the full poem, but the essence of it is the fire is the water and the water is the fire. And there's this guy jumping into the fire and he keeps telling this guy, trust me, that's the guy's jumping into the water and he keeps saying, that's the fire. You're burning because you're actually jumping into fire, but you're not able to see this correctly. I can see it. I'm telling you, jump into the fire. The fire is the water. And the guy doesn't get it, right? And it's like exactly what my life was, where I kept jumping into fire thinking it was water.
Now, what about humor during this time? This wasn't a very fun period, and self-expressed, that's the thing that you and I share, is this love of humor, and that's where we've actually connected the most, I think, is in that place. Like, did you fucking die on the vine like a bad grape at this,
Humor became, it didn't go away, and it redeemed many, many moments and rescued me and, like, you know, functioned as a kind of oxygen line to the part of me that was contorted and writhing in pain. But it also doesn't let you off the hook. You know, I mean, one of the things I love about Zen actually is its sense of humor. There is a tradition within Zen that's kind of like Sufism, which is a real sense of humor. And one of the things that great Zen teachers will do is use humor to just beat the living shit out of you and show you how ridiculous and hilarious. Because really, the whole thing is a punchline at the end of it. When I was
it's a cosmic
worst,
joke.
It is, man. and not in a dismissive way, like a beautiful, elegant, amazingly miraculous love explosion of humor in the most deep, profound way, where you are on the floor laughing your ass off. And the curious thing about that level of suffering, where I had vivid, vivid fantasies repeatedly about killing myself. In fact, the relief for me was this almost tactile fantasy of shoving a pistol in my mouth and blowing my brains out, because I just could not. Right. When I would do that, it would form a kind of release. And then the pain and the agony, I think we've all been in this spot where you lose the distinction. You can't tell anymore, like, what is the agonizing part and what is the funny part? And you hit a eureka moment where you just start laughing and you stop trying to put them in categories, and you're left with the fullness of your human experiences. Like, wow, I am released. It is funny. And I've never been deeper in a pile of shit in my life, and I'm dying and choking, and oh my God, it's still okay. And it's just like, it all bubbles up. And in that moment, I think there's a divine recognition. I mean, like I said at the beginning, spirituality to me is laughing so hard and not knowing even for sure why it is or what it is. Mm. You haven't figured it out yet.
It's being laughed.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, I've had that experience where I'm like, I feel like something is laughing through me. It's happened several times, and it's pretty scary. But what I got out of that, I was like, there's a surrender. Like, and that's a tough one for guys, right? We think that surrender is bad. We're losing a war. We're losing a battle. We're selling ourselves out. But in this larger context, there's something of just, I don't know, that, can you speak more about that?
I think that's really true. And especially, you know, I identify with that, knowing how resistant my personality has been to just participate. My whole life has just been like, you know what? I'm going to play alone. I'm going to build with Legos over here by myself. I know you guys are going to the playground, but I'm going to sit in the corner and write music or whatever it is.
Right.
Just a loner. And so to participate was hard enough. To surrender to a team of women, you know, like the three women in my life are all like, you know, and surrender. I think the main thing for me is that to truly stand on a good day when I'm able to be the father of the family, to be a husband, to be in charge of taking care of everybody in the true masculine way, which is like, I'm going to at least show up, be the dad, provide for people, place to live, structure, stability, discipline, love, reward. You have to surrender first.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm not in a position of surrender before I get into that place with my family, then I'm just the dick. Then I'm just the dictator who's holding court over people and issuing orders.
It's not resignation. It's not a fine, you win.
Yeah.
But there's just a willingness to be impacted. It's a tricky thing. And I've noticed that guys will fucking stay in this stuck place, like fist against fist, against the world, against whatever. They have this thing. And then once there's the softening of just letting that go.
Yep.
That's been my experience. Then things move. And actually, I see you more committed and more engaged in your art and in the world now than I've ever seen you. And it's come from the other side of you stepping into family and stepping into all these things. I mean, does that resonate?
It totally resonates. And I think that it is a common misconception to think of surrender as a kind of victimization, or you're a victim, or you're, you know, submitting in a negative way. And actually, the way you describe surrender to me is right on the money, which is the image I get of surrendering is like, let's say you're on a crotch rocket motorcycle and you're going down the road at like 65 or whatever, and you're sitting straight up and you can't maneuver and you can't go faster. If you just get your body down to the vehicle, surrender and let the dynamics, the aerodynamics of whatever it is that's trying to move, that's the way the craft should move.
So you still get to where you're going, and it's being sensitive enough to where's the resistance? What am I resisting? And can I not resist and still honor and be committed to what I'm doing? It's this fine line. It's such a dance.
Totally fine line. And then at the end of the day, for me, it comes down to, if I haven't surrendered, I'm not available. I'm not available if I have not surrendered.
Because you just bulldog. You're like, all I can see is this end result, and I don't have time or space for anything else. Is that kind of what it
is? Totally. You fill up a room. You know, if I don't surrender, in my family, when I wake up at the beginning of the day or whatever it may be, I'm filling up the space with my assumptions, my preordained, my preconceived notions, and there's not going to be room for possibility. Mm. I can't hear my daughter. I can't hear my wife. I can't be in relationship.
Your head's up your ass.
Totally, man.
So surrender's pulling your head out of your ass.
You think your ass is a helmet, and you put your head in it to protect you, and it's not. It's actually where fecal matter is compacted and then expressed as part of the natural digestive system.
Sculptures.
Yeah. So, surrender good.
Surrender good, and there's a key to it. That'll be a whole other show. Maybe we could go into that some other time.
The passion of surrender, I mean, we really do have a backward idea about it. What I feel coming from it is passion, energy, availability. You're not going to get a cool assignment either until you become available. To me, the mystery is the one that decides what's going to be done, and it issues assignments, and it looks at me, and if I'm not surrendered or available, then it doesn't give me my task. It doesn't give me the thing to do, because it's like, you know, he's too busy with his head up his ass.
Oh, I had the same experience. You know, for like 2 years, I cooked in this place of uncertainty. What's the next step in my life? Everything in my life used to be certain. I knew where I was playing a gig on Friday night, or I knew I had, you know, my company was going to provide for me in this way. I gave all of that up, and suddenly it was this barren landscape, and a lot of my identities died. And I remember just being like, I got to figure it out. And the more that I tried to figure it out, the more painful it got. And the more, yes, the more it fucking hurt of like trying to map it out and try to get it right. And at the end of the day, I was actually in Hawaii and Kauai. And I remember just letting go and just being like, what would happen if I just quit resisting that this is not happening?
And what happened?
I actually experienced my own anger and frustration at it, that I actually got to be in the moment instead of 20 fucking steps ahead, trying to manage and figure out. And I was not, as you said, I think you were right on, like I wasn't available for what was showing up in the moment because I was so fixated on solving some problem out in the future. And I actually missed the experience of being there. That's what actually pissed me off, is that I was in this beautiful place surfing every day and I wasn't enjoying it. My mind was elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that actually, you know, that was such an indicator of like, wow, my head is up my ass. It's really up there. And then there was a point where I just like, what would it look like if I let go? Like just quit fucking worrying about it. Learn it. Like there was a levity that came up around it of just like, learning to laugh at it. Like, there I go, freaking out again. I'm freaking out again.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the other cool part of it, is that to remember that accessing that release and that surrender and that freedom doesn't mean that the freaking out part won't come back again. It just means you got a new place to let it freak out.
There's that thing I'm doing again.
Just don't be the freak out entirely, you know, identified with it. But it's exactly that where... to me, the mystery looks at this situation and is like, you got to surrender. You know, you got to be available. And then when you become available, you got to be okay with things not being okay. Mm-hmm. The mystery is not having you surrender and become available so that it can supply you with all the conveniences and eliminate strife. It's increasing your capacity to remain in strife.
It changes your relationship to the shit. It's not going to be like The Secret.
No, it is not.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Right? But really what this training does, or what this work does, is that it allows us to have a different relationship. So the shit comes up. I get frustrated. I'm stuck in traffic. And it doesn't change the fact that I am going to get frustrated or I get caught in my stuff. But now I have a new relationship to it. I can let it steer me, run my life, or I can have a like, okay, this is it. Yep. And you can't fake that, because that's another form of stuffing it. But there's something that shifts in there. I'm just like, okay,
yeah,
this is life. Like, I'm not going to resist this moment. Like, it's foolish.
And to do that as much as is necessary, as often as is possible, because the other thing is not to think there's going to be a one switch moment. Like in Zen, when I started meditating, they said, count to 10 on your breaths. And I said, you know, well, what do you do when you get to 10? If you get to 10, go back to 1. If you have a thought, go back to 1. I didn't get to 10 for years. You mm-hmm. know, it just, and then when you get to 10, you just still keep doing the same process. But with this kind of release, this kind of surrender, this kind of availability, I think it's the same thing, which is you return to that place of release and surrender, that bigger part that can be okay with the struggle as often as is necessary. For me, man, it's totally all the time, every day. You know, after 15 years of meditation and 6 years of marriage and 2 kids and every kind of transformational teacher and seminar you could ever think of, I still wake up at square one every day. I still fuck up dozens of times a day and have to just go back.
It's true. You do fuck up a lot.
Well, I want to move into Sex God Rock and Roll, your new show. And I want to take full credit for it. And here's why.
Please do.
We were riding down to some retreat years ago, and I said to you, you got to do TV. Like, people love you. They don't love your music as much as they love you.
And I said, TV, will it ever become popular?
Yeah. And I think we're on that trail. So I'm going to take full, and you can send the royalty checks to Trip Lanier.
New man. Okay, will do.
But it's a TV show. And what I like about it is I get Stu the comedian. I get Stu the interviewer. I get Stu the musician. I get all these different versions of you all in one great package week to week. But go for it. Tell me more.
It's an attempt to make spirituality fun, entertaining, and as shallow as it is deep, as stupid as it is profound, as dirty as it is redeeming. I just am tired of either or, like being told that you're either spiritual or you like dirty jokes, or that you're either spiritual or you can get into sex magazines or whatever it may be. So the first simple part of the show is just like, let's not leave anything out, man. Let's put everything on the table. Let's say it's all fair game, whether it's like entertainment, news, or humor, or talk with a spiritual teacher about real intimate, deep stuff. And the show starts with 5 minutes of comedy. I come out and do a monologue and try to keep it, you know, connected to the dumpster. Don't let it slip too far into the ether. And then we do 10 minutes of news from sex, God, rock and roll, those three domains. And it's comedy news. It's kind of like Saturday Night Live approach to news. Then we have usually a commercial. We have a fake commercial sponsor every week. And you've been in many of these sketches as the, I hope your audience is familiar with your comedic genius. They soon will be. If they haven't seen the Alcohard commercial, you star in the Alcohard commercial.
I don't think my listeners know that I can command a boner at any moment.
Yeah, but tell them what your boner really is. I'll tell your listeners right now when they see the Alcohard commercial that his boner is actually my hand under the under the blanket. I was your prop boner and will be again.
So the quick setting is that I'm in a bed with another woman and we're white trash and I'm too drunk to have sex. And so she gives me an Alcohard pill.
Yep.
And then I can now perform.
Yes.
Dutifully.
It's a special supplement.
My wife, before I did the shoot, she's like, wow, you're going to be in bed with a woman for an hour and without like any clothes on. And I was like, hey, no, don't worry about that. It was really that she had to worry about your hand on my cock with a fucking banana.
That's true.
This is how I get like your world. Like, how can I touch Tripp's dick for 20 minutes today?
And film it. And get paid to do it. Check.
And you did pay me. What does that make me?
It makes you a pimp and a whore. You're kind of non-dual. All prostitute. Right.
So there's wonderful products that you promote.
So there's a commercial sponsor. Then we have a guest every week, spiritual teachers for the most part. And then we have...
But you've had shows about polyamory. You've had shows about...
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it really, you know, the topics have been polyamory, beyond monogamy, entheogenic drug use, you know, drug use as a part of meditation practice or spiritual practice. We have a show on feminism and we have a show on UFOs, and that's the first 6 shows of the season.
Where we meet your parents?
That is where I'm going to come out of the ontological closet for the planet.
So where do we find the show? How do we learn about it?
The simplest way is sexgodrockandroll.com, which is, there's no apostrophe in rock and roll. So it's R-O-C-N-R-O-L-L. So sexgodrockandroll.com.
And then if we want to get your CDs and your music, where's
probably
the best?
Probably shouldn't.
If we want some coasters. If we want some drink coasters.
Coasters? Where can you get my CDs? I don't even know. I lost my distribution deal.
You're on iTunes, right?
I'm on iTunes, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I know why you don't sell CDs, is you don't promote them.
It's just with all the physical items to keep track of, it's hard. I just want to say that you're right. I didn't get stung by a wasp.
I wasn't going to let that happen.
Thanks. That's a very unique and singular psychic power that you have.
It's just one.
Dr. Doolittle of the stingers.
I speak to wasps. Stu, thanks for being on the show, my man. I'd love to have you back, and we'll find some way to offend the listeners with your presence.
Next time I'll read some comedy.
Yeah.
And we could play your Alka-Hard commercial.
We could do that.
All right.
We could do that. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Please take a moment to visit thenewmanpodcast.com and let us know what you'd like to hear on the show. Thanks for listening.